For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Have you heard you can listen to your favorite news podcasts ad-free? Good news. With Amazon Music, you have access to the largest catalog of ad-free top podcasts included with your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or visit amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free and catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So yesterday we talked a little bit about the National Labor Relations Board, the general counsel. That's Jennifer Abruzzo, I think is how you pronounce her name. But she came out with a couple of tweets that I said, you know, this is what we need. Someone in that position who understands that workers have the right to strike and employers shouldn't have the right to replace them permanently. It's not the intent of the law, as I've read. It's not the intent of the law, as a lot of my labor lawyer friends have read. But sadly, through bad decision after bad decision, it's where we are. So when an employer like Kellogg's, you know, threatens, hey, you know, we're going to start permanently replacing people. Take it at face. When St. Vincent's Hospital up in Worcester, Mass. Says, sorry, we're not going to let all of your people come back because we're keeping some of the scabs. That's a problem. And here to share some thoughts on, well, on the general counsel's thoughts on maybe if it's possible for us to get back to a place where strikes are actually, a right. I've asked our good friend Sean Richmond to come talk with us. Sean is a contributing writer over at In These Times. He's also the author of Tell the Bosses We're Coming, a new action plan for workers in the 21st century. Sean, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me back.
So did you, I'm sure you saw the tweets by the general counsel. I think everyone in labor circles saw it because it's a great sign, isn't it?
It's a very encouraging sign. Yes. And yeah, there are already memes about this. It's like, oh, when the general counsel starts a tweet thread with the National Labor Relations Act says this and has the little tweet like emoji. It's like, this is going to get good. It's an open invitation for unions to turn back this really terrible Supreme Court decision from 1938 that has never really been properly reevaluated, questioned, whatever, was weaponized by the vast right-wing movement of corporations and the Reagan-Bush administration in 1983 at Phelps Dodge. And really turn strikes into a scary word for a lot of workers because it turns strikes into a thing that can cause you to lose your job when the plain language of the National Labor Relations Act, as the general counsel is saying, says strikes are protected. This act is meant to protect your right to strike. You're allowed to go on strike, but somehow these very ill-considered court decisions and other actions by corporations turn the tables on unions very effectively in the Reagan-Bush era and continuing into the 21st century.
Yeah, I mean, they spend a lot of money on it. Now, yesterday when I saw the tweets come out, you know, my mind goes, well, why now? Why? What brought this out? And then I remembered you had written a piece back in October kind of laying this argument out. How much of it do you think was your doing, or was it just, you know, it was time?
It was time. It was time.
Now yeah. I'm going to give you credit for it because you deserve it.
But it was time. I mean, what I try to do is say, like, guys, this thing, why aren't we doing this? And you know, the history here is frustrating in a lot of ways, right? So, you know, it's a bad Supreme Court decision from 1938. For the most part, it just lays dormant because most employers would not permanently replace their workers who go on strike. It was beyond the pale. And it was only when Phelps Dodge dared their copper mining employees out on strike over draconian cuts in health benefits, pension pay, whatever else, and then immediately bust in thousands of scabs, and then waited them out for a year so that the scabs could then decertify the union. That created the template, the blueprint for this is how you bust a union.
Right.
And it went like wildfire throughout all those years. And so when Bill Clinton comes into office in 1993, the AFL-CIO's top legislative goal is to end the use of permanent replacements by amending the National Labor Relations Act. And it gets stymied by what was then a rare filibuster.
Bob Dole.
Although the beginning of filibusters becoming the norm. Clinton tried some executive action on it, and he got overturned by the courts. And, you know, what labor didn't do back in 1993 is to say, you know, how about we just make the NLRB do its job? Because the plain language of the McKay decision says that, you know, okay, fine. If it's necessary for an employer to protect and continue his business, then he can hire permanent replacements. But he can't have union busting as his main goal. And so there's two components to that, right? Like, we all know that a union that goes on strike over ULPs generally is protected from permanent replacements. But ULP is a fairly high standard, whereas wanting to get rid of your union is a lot more plainly obvious, right? Phelps Dodge bargaining their workers to impasse over the pension and the health benefits was legal. They didn't break the law in terms of the way they bargained, but they very clearly wanted to get rid of the union. And we can all point to other examples of this, you know, the Comcast workers in New York City, the cable company, where a new employer comes in, they buy the company, and they like, no more pension, no more this benefit, no more that. You clearly want to get rid of the union. So that's anti-unanimous, which there's almost no case where an employer does hire permanent replacement scabs where they're not looking to get rid of the union. But the other component, and this is in the plain language of the McKay decision, is if it's necessary to protect and continue your business. So over at St. Vincent's in Massachusetts, where the employer has agreed to all of the strikers' economic demands, they can afford the contract. They just want to punish the strikers. Yep. And keep some of the permanent replacement scabs on. Okay, why is that necessary to protect and continue your business? How would you go out of business? Like, you're not out of workers. The scabs go on a rehire list. The strikers come back. Where's your economic interest here? And so this general counsel is finally getting back to something that the labor movement should have demanded back in 1993. And I think we didn't because we were, I was 14 years old. We were slightly, you know, we took a jaundiced view of the NLRB, viewed it as sort of a broken system. Reagan and Bush had totally broken it. We had no faith in it. And our faith was in legislation. And we went to Congress expecting, like, this is a reasonable minor fix, you know, this accidental Supreme Court decision. The right wingers blew a hole in it the size of a Mack truck. Let's fix it. And that was like one of our first tastes of the fix is really in here.
You're right. And it goes back to Reagan and the push for the Republicans and this, you know, the Reagan Democrats and all of this rebuilding of the Republican Party into one that is vehemently anti-union. Because I remember, and I'm not much older than you, I remember there being pro-union Republicans. And you could barely find one now, but they existed in the past. I know it's hard to believe, but they did.
There might be one on Staten Island. Yeah. I read a lot of books about every 5 to 10 years. There are folks in my world in labor education circles and think tanks pull together these edited, you know, collections of essays and research studies, and it's like, here's what it's going to take to restore the labor movement. And I've got like 20 of them on my shelf here. And what labor is really bad at is we jump on one thing where we're like, that's it. And then we forget the other 19 really good ideas.
Right.
And so in 1993, like that's it was, we're gonna get a legislative amendment to the National Labor Relations Act to you know, prevent employers from hiring permanent replacements, right? Flash forward, you know, a decade later, and now it's EFCA, and oh, card check is the main solution. And like, we just forget, like, this, what Abruzzo was trying to do is, you know, she's trying to adhere to a stricter interpretation of the McKay decision. You know, she's not going to overturn McKay. She can't. It's a Supreme Court decision. But the strict reading of it is you can only hire permanent replacements if it is economically necessary to protect and continue your business, and your ultimate goal is not to break the union.
Right.
Find me an employer where that's the case. Find me one. It's definitely not Kellogg's. It's definitely not St. Vincent's.
So this is where her next tweet comes out. She says, in a recent memo, GC Abruzzo said she'll examine whether a change is necessary to the permanent replacement doctrine to fulfill the mission of the act. Thus, if a charge is filed involving this issue, she'll consider whether it's appropriate to ask the NLRB to reconsider the law. This sounds to me kind of like a, hey, if anybody's out there listening, bring me something.
I know. No, I mean, like, I think I ended my piece in these times. I'm like, please, for the love of God, file the ULP. And like, there's a bunch of us on Twitter, including, you know, your I think it used to work for you, Banditelli, you know, file the ULP. It's like almost a hashtag at this point. Like, just file the ULP. Do it. They're begging for it. They're going to take it seriously. Make the case. St. Vincent's and Kellogg's are the best test cases at this point for that. They should file those ULPs and like, let's see where it goes. And, you know, I've already, I'm already hearing some of the sort of the unintended consequences. Like if it goes to, you know, if the NLRB goes to a stricter McKay standard, then the bosses are going to take this to the courts. And then we're dealing with the, you know, Trump's federal courts, and we're dealing with a McKay that has the appearance of stare decisis. And, you know, the worries here, and it's almost like a boogeyman worry, is could we get a worse decision out of the Supreme Court? And I'm just like, what would be worse?
Exactly.
We already don't have the right to strike.
Exactly.
What are they going to do to us at this point?
I'm right there with you. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Sean Richmond. He's a contributing editor over at In These Times. He's also the author of Tell the Bosses We're Coming, A New Action Plan for Workers in the 21st Century. We'll get links out on social media how you can take a look at that. If you got a question, comment, something for Sean, quick, you can jump in. 1-866-416-RICK, 1-866-416-7425. Now, here, I want to change gears a little bit. Today, Major League Baseball locked out their players and their workers. And the first story I read over at Yahoo.com was it's a work stoppage, and I know this is just kind of, you know, semantics, but it's not a work stoppage. The billionaire owners threw the people out to the curb.
Well, it says how disappointed I am in my own New York Mets that this is actually news to me. This is how much attention I'm paying to baseball. But yeah, no, you might have seen this like clip of this New Orleans TV station when workers at some delivery company in New Orleans went on strike at dawn. And this like cubby reporter shows up and like, she's like, and they call themselves the Teamsters and they're out here, they're protesting for their rights. And they say, this isn't fair. She's like, she has no, like there's no vocabulary left for most reporters, which is true. Although the flip side of it is like, we're really blessed by a number of mostly print or digital reporters who have organized their own newsrooms and now they know it. And suddenly we have this great crop of some of the best labor reporters that we've had since Abe Raskin croaked, that they understand it at a deeper level. But, you know, I can tell you from experience, it's not taught in J school. I mean, no. my minor at Queens College,
But it's one of those things. I guess it's just a little pet peeve. But, you know, to go back to, you know, you had said a bit ago that, you know, employers, you know, didn't fire their workers. They didn't take advantage of in the past. Could it be that the community wouldn't have allowed it? Could it be that, you know, the company would have reacted differently? Because, you know, I had someone tell me back when I was a kid, it's one of those, when I was a kid, and he's a little bit older than me, you couldn't, he said, you couldn't trip over someone and not hit a union member. Because, you know, union density back in the 70s was, what, somewhere in the 28, 30% range. In the 60s, it was as high as 40%. Even when I started working, it was over 25%. So, you know, the culture was everyone knew somebody who was in a union, and you didn't want that guy to lose their job. And also, you wanted them to do well because you probably did better, too. I mean, I can tell you stories of management coming out to us in negotiation going, get a good deal, because whatever you get, we're going to get, too. That's how things used to work.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely the case, right? And so it's partly in the 1970s, you know, with stagflation, folks were feeling a pinch. Union density was just starting to decline throughout the 1970s. And so the spillover effect of, you know, GM wins something, and if GM wins a 3% raise, you were going to tend to get at least a 2% raise, even if you had nothing to do with auto. That was starting to decline. You had much more critical coverage of unions within the media, and not just like news media, even just like pop culture media, right? Like you and I could both sort of list off a bunch of movies in the 70s where, you know, just the general sort of frustration with management was also loaded up with the frustration of the unions. It just felt like the bureaucracy and people weren't with us. And then, you know, Phelps Dodge, 1982, 1983, right? That neatly lines up with Paul Volcker's shock to the system to deal with inflation. Of just like, we're going to ramp up unemployment. We're going to reduce the power of workers so that wages stop going up. That's what made it so that Phelps Dodge could bus in, you know, 1,000 scabs who were willing to, you know, cross state lines, get put up in a hotel, face those ugly picket lines, and take those jobs away from those workers. Things got incredibly ugly there. And that's what made the permanent replacement strategy work. What's interesting about this moment, obviously, is that I will not call what's happening right now a strike wave. Strikes are back in a very real way, and that's very heartening. And strikes are back because workers are feeling a bit of their own power. You know, they know that bosses have to compete over them. And they're much more willing to say, this is not good enough. You know, you got to give us a raise or I'm out of here. I'm going to quit. If I'm non-union, I'm going to go on strike. If I'm union. And that is some of the noise that I think is adding to the general counsel's tweet storm the other day, you know, and also I'm sure there are conversations that are taking place. Right. And I'm sure that there are folks at the international unions, and at the law firms in DC who spent most of their careers probably thinking that strikes scare workers and we can't talk about strikes. They're suddenly feeling like, oh, wait, workers are ready to go on strike again. And we need to protect that because that's how we win.
That is how we win. Sean, I appreciate the time. As always, great stuff, my friend. Good stuff. Our good friend Sean Richmond. Make sure you check out his book, Tell the Bosses We're Coming, A New Action Plan for Workers in the 21st Century. We'll get links out on social media. Quick break, right back. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.